SFM hosted Nick Griffin, Chow Ma and James Sinidis from Munro Partners at a lunch event at the Sofitel Melbourne on Collins on the 20th of March 2024. This event was part of a national series which also took place in Brisbane, Sydney, Adelaide and Perth. It is important to note the information provided in this audio recording is general financial advice only and doesn't take into account the objectives, financial situation or needs of individuals. Full disclaimers, PDSs and TMDs for the Munro Funds can be found on the GSFM website at gsfm.com.au. We hope you enjoy the podcast and find the content compelling and valuable. Thank you.
Thank you everyone for taking the time out of your busy schedules to join us for the GSFM and Munro Partners lunch briefing today here at the Sofitel. Now, I know most of you here reasonably well, but there are a couple of newer faces. So as a reminder, Zane Layden, I'm a Senior Distribution Manager at GSFM. I'm joined by a number of my colleagues, namely Key Account Manager Simone Newman. Simone will host today's Q&A. Our Head of Retail Distribution in Stephen Fletcher, who will conclude today's proceedings. And it's also great to be joined by our co-founder and CEO, Damien McIntyre. Now, as a reminder, at GSFM, you know, we're essentially looking for gaps in the market in terms of where investment strategies are underrepresented, in high demand, or significantly differentiated, and filling those gaps with the highest quality institutional grade asset managers that have the investment capabilities to fill those gaps. And we're very fortunate to be partnered up with a fantastic Melbourne-based fund manager in Munro Partners, who are ultimately looking to fill that global equity growth bucket for you, your clients, and investors alike. Now, Munro Partners have grown to manage in excess of $4 billion in assets since the business was launched back in 2016. And this growth in assets is really three things. It's A, it's an endorsement of their investment capabilities. B, it's an endorsement of the fact that they do fill that global equity growth bucket for many investors. And C, it's a reflection of the fantastic support that we receive from many, if not most of you in this room. So on behalf of GSFM, Munro Partners and myself, you know, thank you for your ongoing support over the global growth journey. Now, from Munro Partners, I'm joined by someone who doesn't need much of an introduction in Nick Griffin. Nick is the co-founder and chief investment officer of Munro Partners, and along with the broader team, he is ultimately responsible for managing the Munro Global Growth Funds. Now, Nick and I are also super excited to introduce you to two partners and portfolio managers at Munro Partners in James Sinidis and Chow Ma. James has in fact worked with Nick Griffin for the best part of a decade and is the co-lead for the Munro Climate Change Leaders Fund, a portfolio of companies that enable the decarbonisation of the planet. Fast approaching his three-year performance track record, we look forward to hearing from James on the latest developments within the climate area of interest. As mentioned, I'm also joined by Chow Ma. Chow joined Munro Partners a little over 12 months ago now. Many of you would recognise Chow from last year's roadshow, or perhaps even from her time at the highly regarded Cooper Investors, in which she spent the previous 5 years running a global fund. Chow is the portfolio manager for the newly launched Munro Global Smaller Midcap Fund, a portfolio of companies with a market cap of $250 million to $30 billion. And we're excited to also hear from Chow about the exciting opportunities within that small to mid-cap market space and the companies that she thinks can grow multifold over the next few years. Now, Nick, to set the scene. So if we rewind the clock back to 2022, you know, we had inflation was rampant, interest rates were rising, we had the conflict and still have the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. It was a challenging year for all asset classes, you know, none more so than global growth equities. Munro's unique risk management process allowed you to manage through that period and set the funds up for 2023, which was when rates peaked, or long-term rates peaked, and it marked the end of the bear market. At the time, it was your view that investors will have fewer alternatives to earn an adequate return than to come back to those key structurally growing companies that could grow somewhat independent of the macroeconomic environment. Pleasingly, this occurred through 2023, and it was fantastic to see all the Munro funds well up into the double digits. Fast forward to today, equity markets have continued their strong start to 2024. So Nick, I propose to you two really quite simple questions. Where to from here, and why global growth equities today? And with that said, you certainly haven't come to the lunch to hear from me, so I will hand over to Nick for an update on Munro Partners and where the team is seeing the great structural growth opportunities to generate returns for you and your investors in the months and years ahead. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, Zane, and thanks very much, GSFM, for getting such a big room of supporters here in Melbourne. Melbourne is our hometown. It's always nice to play to a home audience. Munro Partners, invest in the journey. That's our tagline. It's been our tagline for a while now. Clearly, as Zane pointed out, it's been a bit of a journey in growth equities last couple of years. It's a bit of a journey in equity markets. But today, since we've got you locked in the room for an hour and so, we're going to take you on a different type of journey. The journey we're going to take you on today is to tell you a bit about our business, what we do and how we do it, and the products that we have available. Second part is to answer that question, Zane, is why growth equities now? We're definitely going to touch on that quickly. But the main part of our presentation today is to really take a journey through where we think we're going to find growth, that structural growth drivers that you look for us to find, where we think we're going to find that in the next few years. That journey is going to take you through AI, it's going to take you through tech, but it's also going to take you through climate. James is going to talk about a climate fund, and it's also going to take you through small caps. Charles is going to talk about our small cap fund. And lastly, I'll come back at the end to bring it together, and we're going to leave heaps of space at the end for questions this year. We understand there's a lot of questions people want to ask. We're going to do a little panel at the end, and you can talk about it. You can ask us really whatever you want, so make sure you think of some along the way, because I'm sure we're going to say some controversial stuff. Firstly and foremost, who are we? Okay, so Munro Partners, our goal is to be your global growth manager. Really simple. Global equities is an asset case that you should allocate to, and we want to be the growth part of your global equities allocation. The business was set up in July 2016, based here in Melbourne, Australia, so we're just passing seven and a half years. Funds have all compounded at more than 10% per annum in that time frame, and that actually steps off a track record at our previous firm where we had a 10-year track record of compounding at roughly just over 15% per annum. We run just under $5 billion in assets under management. I'll show you in a second. We started with a bit less than that. We have 28 staff, 12 in the investment team. We're situated literally right over the road at 80 Collins Street. I highly encourage you to come over anytime you want, hassle your GSFM representative, say, I want to come and see them, come and kick the tyres. We don't mind. We enjoy what we do. We love showing you what we do if you want to come and visit anytime you want. So this is our journey. This is the journey from what we began, and this shows you our FUM growth over the last 7.5 years, okay? So this business was started with 3 people and just $20 million in assets under management. It's grown dramatically over that period, mainly through the blue bar, which is our absolute return mandate, or the Munro Global Growth Fund, which is unique in the fact that it's global equities, but with an absolute return focus. But it's important to flag we've also grown through our long-only mandates. So the purple bar is our long-only mandates. Some of those allocations are institutional, some of them are retail. And secondly, you'll see the yellow bars at the top. That's the climate fund that we launched 3 years ago. And then most recently, the SMID fund that we're going to talk about today. All of this growth has effectively been driven by one very important thing, and that's very much our partnership culture at Munro. So we own and control 75% of our business. We give equity to our staff. We give it to them. If they join us, we like them for a while, we give it to them. We give it to them for free. Everyone at Munro earns profit share. So we earn profit share. The salary bonus model doesn't really work. It's salary and profit share. Everyone's aligned on the profits of the group. If you leave Munro, you just give your equity back. And so what that means is we can continually attract really great staff to help us run more and more products over time, or these more products that we've launched. These are the 4 main products I'm showing you here, and these are the ones we're going to talk about today, and we're not going to be launching more products. These are the main 4, but the first 2 I'm going to be talking about a lot, which is the Munro Global Growth Fund and the Munro Concentrated Global Growth Fund. So that's the absolute return and the long-only equivalent of the Munro products. James, as I said, will talk about the climate fund that we co-manage, and Chow will talk about SMID. But most importantly, what I hope comes through today and what I hope you'll see, and the journey I suppose I was hoping to flag to you is what you're going to see is the domain expertise that we're building up over time. So over time, our partnership model has allowed us to attract really, really good people to come and work at Munro. We can attract them to come and work here because we can offer them equity. We can offer them upside in our zero goodwill partnership model. We hired Mike from the Future Fund and Axie. We hired Hugh from UniSuper, we hired Jeremy from Pictet. James has unfortunately been stuck with me for a decade. And Chow came over from Coopers. And you should see us keep doing this. We're going to keep doing this. We're going to keep building our expertise. We're going to keep working at the process that I'm about to show you. And I think we're going to keep getting better at it. We're already better at it today than we were 3 years ago, and we're better at it today 3 years before that. You won't see that month to month in the performance, but you should see that over the journey. And that's definitely something I'm trying to want to convey today. Okay, so how do we invest? What do we do? How do we make our money? What's the craft that we're working on? What are we building this business for? What are we attracting these good people to do? What's the problem we're trying to solve? And the problem we're trying to solve is incredibly simple. We just firmly believe, our edge is to firmly believe that equity markets are a simple game of very few winners and lots of losers. Equity markets are very different to other asset classes, okay? Bonds mean revert, currencies mean revert. Equities don't, okay? Equities, you have these few great companies and thousands of mediocre ones. The index keeps going up because the S&P 500 kicks all the bad ones out and all the good ones keep coming in. So the index is actually quite hard to beat. The index actually self-corrects towards these great companies. And so if you actually really do the stats outside of the index, this chart on the right, and I've used it lots of times before, and I apologize if you get to see it before, but if you go back over the last 90 years, the study's done, this one's done by a guy called Hendrik Bessenbinder. If you go back over 90 years, in the United States, there was 26,500 companies listed. Yet the top 50 make up nearly 50% of the entire value created. Okay, so 50 companies out of 26,000 make up nearly 50% of the entire returns, okay? You need to find those few winners. It's the same in Australia, by the way. CSL and Macquarie make up the majority of the returns of the market over the last 10 years. You need to find those few winners. Our process is designed to find those few winners. And just to illustrate, I plotted those top 50 for you there on the right here. We've had this chart for a while. This is time and months, and this is annualized returns. You know these companies now. They're household names. You're aware of them. But every time, it wasn't macroeconomics that created them. It was structural change. They identified a big structural change, and they won. It's always the same, whether it's Google, Facebook, Amazon in digitalization, Microsoft, Oracle, and software, Walmart, Home Depot, and big box retailing, McDonald's, and quick service restaurants. It's always the same. Big structural change occurs, there's a couple of big winners. Our job as your growth manager is really to occupy this top left-hand corner. Identify the big structural change, identify the winner. That's literally all we're going to talk about today, because that's what's going to make you your money in the next few years. That's what's the most important bit. I think I have one macro slide for you. How do we do it? We do it like this. This is a simple process. I'm giving you the short version. I've given you the long version plenty of other years, but I'll give you the short version because there's just too much other stuff to talk about today. Ultimately, there's thousands of companies in the world. We have no hope of covering them all. We want to focus on the structurally growing companies. The structurally growing companies are split into these things we call area of interest, like high-performance computing, like healthcare, like digital enterprise cloud computing, like consumers upscaling. This is our structurally growing universe. There's only 1,000 companies here. We think there's 6 qualities to a great growth company. I've mentioned them before. Obviously, you can always look in the right area, but you might find the wrong company. These 6 qualities will lead you to the right company. 1, they can grow. 2, they can leverage that growth. 3, they can do it sustainably. 4, they have good ESG principles. 5, they've normally got a controlling shareholder. And if you had to pick one of them, the last one's the most important, and their customers love them. If your customer loves your product, you've generally got a great product. These are the 6 things you need to be a great growth company. We then build our own models. And then the last thing, just to flag really importantly, that I'll touch on very briefly, is just to do this in a very risk-adjusted manner, okay? So we are different from other growth managers. We run this stop-loss process we talk about. Why do we do that? Because the vast majority of companies end up being mediocre. You're going to make mistakes. You need to have a process to do that. And so ultimately, we're about recognizing the mistakes and removing them quickly. These are our top 10 losers since inception. And then finding those few winners and running them for long periods of time. And these are our top 10 winners. If you do this process over and over again, it's the path to double-digit returns. And it's the same across all of our products, okay? So the products we're going to talk to you about today, we're using exactly the same process with every single one. We're using exactly the same stop loss with every single one. And we're using the same investment team. The reason why we're using the same investment team is because we're building our domain expertise in these areas to get better and better at what we do. Okay, I promised why growth equities. I'm going to do this bit really quickly because we're going to get to the fun stuff. Why growth equities is really, really simple. Interest rates have peaked, okay? So what went wrong the last 2 years for growth equities is very simple. Interest rates got all the way down to 0%. This is US 10-year bonds. And then they backed up. 5% very quickly. Every asset class in the world derated very, very quickly in terms of value and assets, and growth derated the most. Why? Because it's usually at a higher valuation. The good news is that is behind us. Interest rates are either flat or down from here. I'm happy to take that up in the Q&A. We don't care which one it is, because once they're flat, the derating finishes and stocks go back to following their earnings. And it's that earnings growth we're trying to find when we're looking at these structural changes. The other thing that I know has confused a lot of people, and it definitely confused us a bit at the start of last year, this time a year ago, was if rates went from 0 to 5, surely the economy was going to slow. The economy did slow. It didn't slow that much. But importantly, for the biggest companies in the world, it didn't slow at all. The S&P 500 is just not the economy, I'm afraid. If you needed a better example, 2023 was it. These are just 5 companies in the top 20. This is their earnings growth. And in every case, it accelerated in 2023. Sometimes because of things like AI and NVIDIA, or GLP-1s if you're Eli Lilly or Novo Nordisk. Sometimes it's just Visa, cash to card, just kept going. Fine, no problem. Didn't matter what you bought more lower goods instead of higher goods, it's fine. Visa found its way through. Google had a little bump, but found its way through. So put simply, why growth equities from here is because rates have peaked. Earnings growth has been resilient. And if anything, it's going to accelerate from here. And the reason why it's going to accelerate is because these structural changes that we keep talking about, they didn't stop in the down cycle. If anything, they've accelerated. And secondly, at some point later this year, the whole economy is going to accelerate as well, because the Fed's going to cut rates, RBA is going to cut rates, and consumers are going to feel a bit better. So you're actually going to get an economic recovery on top of peaking rates. I know stocks didn't get as low as you thought they would. I'm afraid it's time to move on. We moved on a long time ago, and we're glad we did. Okay, current positioning. So what I'm going to be talking about here is mainly the positioning for the absolute return products and the long-only products. So how have we positioned our funds going forward? If rates have peaked and earnings are going to accelerate, we want to be positioned in where the biggest acceleration is today. That's essentially what our process does. This is how we've positioned the fund at the end of February. It's actually very similar to what I showed you in August, to anyone who came to our August presentation, and it's not that dissimilar to what I showed you in March a year ago. We honestly think AI is going to be a really big deal. We've completely drunk the Kool-Aid here, and today I'm going to try and get you guys to drink it too. The reality is the biggest area of interest in the fund is digital enterprise. That's cloud computing. That's essentially software companies and cloud companies that are benefiting from the rollout of AI. Below that is high-performance computing. That's semiconductors that we think are the shovels in AI. That's the main area I'm going to be talking about. Below that, we have some of our other areas of interest that are not correlated to AI, things like digital payments or things like consumer stocks. We would expect those to get bigger as the year goes on. So this fund will become more diversified as the year comes on. It will get more diversified because the economy is going to get better. I think that's reasonably logical from here. But right now, what I want to do is spend a bit of time talking to you about AI. So why is AI such a big deal? I've shown this slide before. And I know people are looking at the NVIDIA chart going, geez, it looks a lot like Cisco in 2000, and let me try and convince you otherwise. AI is a big deal because AI is effectively, what's happened with generative AI in December 2022 was really the iPhone moment for AI. If you go back to 2007, 2008, the iPhone came along and it put the internet on your telephone. Internet on your telephone created apps. Those apps created some of the biggest companies in the world, Facebook. Google did well with Google Maps, Uber, Instagram, again, within Facebook. Things like DoorDash, et cetera. All of these apps effectively came off your phone because you basically got a mobile phone in the pocket. You got the internet in your pocket. Generative AI will be exactly the same thing. This is what I said in August. You'll just see thousands of these apps appear that will all use large language models that will all be useful to all of you. Everyone in this room is probably already using some of these things. And so then rather try to convince you of this, what we did today with help of some of our great team at Munro is we gave you a couple of examples. So we've got a couple of videos here, okay? So to just give you an idea, just since we last caught up, our investment team meetings are effectively full of people bringing in new AI products where a company like Adobe has effectively plugged themselves into a large language model and can completely transform what they do. So this is Adobe Firefly. Adobe, as you know, has a large picture category. In that picture universe, they plug it into generative AI, and you can do things like this. So if I want a picture of Munro Mountains, I type Munro Mountains. I want them in summer, so I type a word summer, I get them in summer. I want a lake running through the center, I get a lake running through the center. It's not looking Scottish enough. We need some flowers. Let's put the flowers in the front, and along come the flowers, and I've got the picture I want, okay? So just think of this as a productivity tool. Think of it a productivity tool for people who are designing advertising and videos out there. And so from that point of view, that's just one product that's already appeared this year in that iPhone example I was trying to give you. Here's the second one. Here's Pinterest, okay? Pinterest is a website that a lot of people use to try and work out how they're going to fix their shed, design their living room. But the guys at Pinterest got very smart. They plugged it into generative AI. And now it can be used as a shopping funnel. So here's Pinterest. Again, another example. I showed this one late last year. Say I wanted to look like George Clooney. I've decided I'm going to Italy. I want to look like George Clooney. I want to look like George Clooney in Italy. I can find a picture of George, and there's a dot. I like those sunnies. I can click on them, and that's where I go to buy them. Say I find the same picture of Amal. I think Amal is very fashion forward. I want the handbag. I click on the handbag, and there's the handbag I can buy. And I'm going to embarrass myself here and pronounce this incorrectly. It is Loewe. 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 I'm reliably informed this is the handbag of choice for everyone in the room, and this is the one you should be looking for. There's a reason why the team chose this video. So that's really helpful. Pinterest, Firefly, you can do pictures, you can go shopping. How can you guys use it, okay? How can we use it every day? Here's a good one. So here's the Munro Growth webinar from March 2023, a year ago today. Let's take the YouTube link at the top. Hopefully this works. Yep, there we go. We'll grab the YouTube link. We'll plug that into Gemini, which is Google's AI model. And we'll go, Gemini, what did Nick Griffin say last year? What were his best ideas from the webinar in 2023? It'll watch the video, which is video, by the way, words. It'll listen to the words, and then it'll summarise it for you. Okay? This will basically tell you what I said a year ago. Thankfully, I said we were reasonably constructive on equity markets going into 2023. It said we quite liked high-performance computing at NVIDIA. It also said we thought the China reopening was going to be a big deal. So two out of three aren't bad. This one's going to come back to hurt me big style. Next time you see us, I want you to watch the recording. You can just check what I said last time. And you can check what I said last time like that, okay? So it's pretty obvious. These products are going to become very, very useful. They're going to become very useful. People in this room are probably using them every day, and you're going to use them more and more. You know why? Just the same way your iPhone became useful to you, and you used it more and more and more, okay? So how do you make money out of it? That's what you're here to find out. You make money in two ways. It's really simple. At the top is the panning for gold, okay? If we go back to the iPhone example, there is going to be thousands of applications. I just showed you three, okay? Some of those applications are going to end up being really big, like Facebook ended up being really big, like Netflix ended up being really big. But at the bottom, if you want, you can just invest in the shovels. The reality is every one of these applications has to be run on the cloud. All your data has to be in the cloud to get it to work. And the cloud providers are gearing up for this by spending basically heinous amounts of money on NVIDIA chips and the NVIDIA chip supply chain. So let's start with how we make money out of this. The first place you start is with the shovels. Okay, semiconductors are the ultimate shovels in the AI boom, period. What we're showing you here is the area of interest that we call high-performance computing and the area of interest that we also call connectivity. So we're talking about the high-end chips that you need to run this and the devices that you're going to run it on. Within here, we like NVIDIA, but we also like the whole supply chain. I'm sure everyone's going to ask me about competitive threats to NVIDIA. The reality is someone is going to have to build out all this equipment to allow these products to run. And that includes the tool makers that build it on the foundry, that help build the NVIDIA chips, the memory that goes on the NVIDIA chips, and the way you package them. Why is this? This basically, from our point of view, is the big fourth tectonic shift in computing. What we think is happening from here is the next big shift. And I just want to be really clear. This has happened twice in my lifetime, okay? I was around for the internet revolution. I was 25 years old. I literally had no idea what I was doing. I was around for the mobile revolution. James was with me as well. We were building digital advertising models. That's where we made our track record. That's where we made our money. We're now in the AI revolution. This is where we're going to try and position the fund to make money from this again. Every single one of these steps, the mainframe, the PC era, the mobile era, the artificial intelligence era, you basically 10x growth in semiconductor demand, okay? You basically connect everything, in this case, in the world to the internet and process that data really, really quickly. On top of that, in every single one of these big shifts, you created the biggest company in the world. IBM was the biggest company in the world at the time. Microsoft was the biggest company in the world. Apple, until recently, has been the biggest company in the world. NVIDIA has got a really good chance of becoming the biggest company in the world. Why is this happening? What's NVIDIA doing? You mightn't have heard of this company until recently. You're probably, as I said, plotting it against a Cisco chart saying, look at this amazing analysis I've done. But what do they actually do? What does NVIDIA do? Why is this happening to NVIDIA? And the simple way to think about NVIDIA is we know this company well. We've met them multiple times over 5 years. We've owned the company for 5 years. I was there last June. We've spoken to the IR multiple times. Every time we see them, they say the same thing. They've been saying the same thing the entire way, which is that accelerated computing will ultimately pass general computing. General computing is what you've got here as a CPU. It's effectively a single-lane freeway. This is what we've been doing for decades, i.e. using Moore's law to make computers go faster and faster and faster. NVIDIA, which has actually been around for 30 years, always said that that would run out and that what we should build is a multi-lane highway. CPUs and GPUs, fast roads for doing for big decision CPUs and lots of GPUs, lots of other roads to create the ability for more traffic to go through. On top of that, they put the software on top of it to allow it to work. And so what ended up happening is this started to work. It worked first in video games, where NVIDIA makes these things, they call this accelerated computing. It worked first in video games, where NVIDIA put these products inside PC gaming computers to make video games work better. It then started to work for data centers, for recommendation engines, and then ultimately it works for generative AI. And the reason why it works is because if you think about it, every decision that generative AI does, or every decision a video game makes, or every decision that a recommendation makes is personalized, okay? The outcome I get is different from the outcome Simone gets, which is different to the outcome Zane gets, if that makes sense. Companies are trying to sell to you by working out your personal experience, and they're using a lot and a lot more accelerated computing. Generative AI is having a conversation with me, which is going to be different to the conversations happening with you, so you need even more accelerated computing, if that makes sense. And so what's ended up happening is the entire industry is shifting to what NVIDIA talks about. So an NVIDIA chip looks like this. It's bigger. It's got those multi-lane highways in it. The rest of the world's stuck looking at chips like that. And so what we're seeing here is a profound change in the way we make computers faster, and a profound change in the way that people who invest in computers going faster, who benefit from it, are going to have to shift their spending patterns and their design patterns. And just to put this in a bit of context for you, NVIDIA is going to sell $100 billion worth of these accelerators this year. $100 billion. 3 years ago, they sold $6 billion. $2 billion to the video game industry and $4 billion to data centers. This year, $4 billion to the video game industry, $96 billion to the data center industry. Their closest competitor, AMD, is going to sell $3 billion worth of accelerators this year. Okay, so they have pretty much a 95, 96% market share today. That's their starting point. And the reason why they had that starting point is because they always were going down a different path. They're just having their moment because everybody needs this product today, and the real question is how long will they need it for? The other thing we can do here, by the way, is that we talk about domain expertise, about working further into this, is this is what we can do with NVIDIA chip. So we can now break that NVIDIA chip, we can look inside it and see all the pieces that go into it. This is a side-on schematic. The same way you busted an iPhone in 2007 to work out all the bits that went in it, we're doing the same with this NVIDIA chip, the way this chip is designed. We're looking at this from a memory point of view, a packaging point of view, a software point of view, and a metrology point of view. That's essentially the semiconductor trade. The second way you make money out of AI is after the hardware is built out, is going to be software. We see three distinct categories here. The first is cloud service providers. So as I said, as these applications are run, they're going to be running more and more on big data centers. You're going to need to shift faster to the cloud. The second way it happens is through software providers. Microsoft, as we all know, has released Copilot. Everybody in this room is going to probably pay an extra $30 a user to get their Teams meeting summarized, to get their emails organized, to get their Excel sheet to work, to write a PowerPoint presentation with Word. It's not a lot to ask, and so all of these software companies, particularly the biggest ones, will upsell you through a Copilot. And lastly, you know, digital media companies are going to use it to create bigger engagement. Let me show you just two examples. I'll skip the cloud one. I think it's fairly obvious. But if you look at Microsoft Copilot, as I said, they're already selling Copilot for GitHub, which is a programming language. It's already double the price. It helps predict the programming you want to write. They've already had a 60% uptake. We think it's just a matter of time before people upgrade to these other products over time. Yes, it's not happening today, but it's quite easy to look forward and see that it will happen. Like, not just for Microsoft, but for other large software companies like Adobe's and others I showed you. Last one I'll show you, which, because it's a bit more nuanced, and it was a bit more of the aha moment that we saw back in the last results season in February. So everyone's trying to work out why the market's going up so much. Facebook was one of the big reasons, okay? Facebook was really the best example we've seen of what happens if you invest heavily in this technology. This is Facebook's CapEx over the last 3 years. We estimate they've spent more than $30 billion on NVIDIA GPUs over the last 5 years, and they spent $7 billion last year alone. All of that money they spent to make their recommendation engines better. So who's got kids who walk around with a phone and effectively walk into a poll because they're just constantly watching short-form video? And they're effectively addicted to short-form video. They can't stop swiping. Why they're swiping is because Facebook spent all this money on GPUs. This is engagement trends at Instagram, effectively flat at 59 minutes a day for a long period of time, and then it starts to accelerate again. The algorithm gets better because you're using more AI. The more AI you use, the better algorithm you get. Better algorithm you get, the better engagement, the better revenue you get. So Facebook goes back to being a 20% grower, having been a 5% grower last year. A mature business became unmature in the space of 2 years. That's how we're seeing AI work today. Last thing I'd just say is a lot of it feels like it's already happened. Short answer is it hasn't, okay? We're honestly just getting warmed up here. The team have been around the world recently and obviously back from the US. I just told you about the top of the iceberg, okay? So that's AI in semis, being used in data centers to help software companies sell their product better. Below the line is all the stuff we're working on now, okay? So think about AI on a CT scan. Think about a radiology scan. Think about how hard it is to get radiographers. Think about if you took all the CT scans in the world, what you could learn out of that. Think about AI in drug discovery. Think about AI and how you build a building, the digital twins that you can build to help you build it quicker without making mistakes. We have a great company looking at security camera footage. Think about AI on security camera footage and how that can help with threat detection. Think about AI in surgical robots. Think about it in cars. And lastly, get excited, there's an AI phone coming. Samsung's already got one out and Apple's going to release one next year. And we might even get to the point where Siri actually works for us all. That's essentially what we're looking for. So from our point of view, great area. I know I spent a lot of time of it. Worth keeping your eye on. In my last couple of minutes here, I just quickly want to talk about consumer. I did say consumer is going to become a bigger part of the fund later in the year. These are some of our consumer investments. We're very lucky that we've had this, well, not lucky that we've had this big downturn, but one of the benefits of a big downturn is it gives you great opportunities to buy consumer companies you really like. These are some of our investments today, and you can expect us to add to this. Why do we think it's such a good opportunity? If I just look at a simple business like Lululemon, I've talked about it before, ultimately taking share from the other areas. We have a whole team within Munro who's obsessed with athleisure and running and which sneaker and product works the best, and we try them all, including the men with Lululemon. Ultimately, it's a share taker. We like this business. We think it can grow over time through store rollout and new products. There's no reason to think it won't. This is the earnings growth of Lululemon over time. It's been structurally delivering for a long period of time. But the reason why it's exciting is because back in 2022, we had to pay 50 times earnings for Lululemon, but then interest rates went from 0 to 5%, and now we can buy it for 30 times earnings. In fact, we actually picked this one up at 25 times earnings when we bought it. So the multiple's halved because of the interest rate moved, and so you're now set up for rates to either be flat and the earnings growth to keep going, or rates to come down and the earnings growth and the multiple to come up. That's the setup that this is opportunities given us. And it's exactly the same at Chipotle. Chipotle, there's a Guzman Gomez downstairs. Guzman Gomez, it's a great idea, but they copied it off of these guys. These guys have 3,500 stores in the US heading to 8,000 and then beyond into the rest of the world. It's a classic rollout story, fast casual dining rollout story. Put simply, executing perfectly over a long period of time. Used to have to pay 60 times earnings for it. Recently got it for 35 times earnings. And so this is really just accentuating why we think it's a good time for growth equities and why these companies that are basically still doing the same thing they've always done, we're just getting a really good opportunity to buy them. And you can expect us to lean into this more as the year goes on. Now I'm going to hand it over to James to talk about the climate fund. And again, just before he comes up, just want to flag, here we're talking about the Climate Leaders Fund. This is a fund that helps you invest and enable from the decarbonisation. But ultimately, some of these ideas are also represented in the main fund. These are what I'm talking about when I talk about domain expertise. Climate, again, is another area we expect to come up as the year goes on, because there's a lot of exciting things going on here. And I'll let James tell you everything we know about climate, and then Chow tell you everything we know about SMidCap, and then I'll tell you how it's all going to fit into the Big Cap Fund at the end. Thanks very much.
Great. Thanks, Nick. Thanks, everyone, for your time today. We really appreciate it. So as Nick mentioned, I'm going to talk about the Climate Leaders Fund today. Just a big step back, first of all, I'll just explain the opportunity as we see it. So I think everyone is probably aware of, obviously, the climate transition, the energy transition we need to go through. The estimates a few years ago from the European Investment Bank were for about $50 trillion of spend to decarbonise the planet and move to net zero by 2050. Those estimates are actually probably out of date now. We actually had Bloomberg in this morning, Bloomberg New Energy Finance. They're sort of talking about $200 trillion. So there's some huge estimates out there. And it's just important when we sort of talk about these numbers in terms of spend and what it's going to cost, to actually just recognise that that spending is going to turn up as revenue for the companies that enable decarbonisation of the planet. So, i.e., this is a $50 trillion revenue opportunity for those companies. And you can see from the slide that we actually think it's going to touch a lot of different parts of the economy. So it's going to touch old school businesses like energy efficiency companies that decarbonise buildings like this one. Buildings that are 30% of global emissions. Buildings like this one need to upgrade their HVAC, their lighting, etc. It's going to touch transmission grids. Transmission grids very old. It's going to touch obvious areas like renewables build out and passenger EV. And further down the line, it's going to be opportunities in other areas like hydrogen and so forth. What's underpinning all of this growth? There's three big sort of tailwinds underpinning this. So first of all, you've got the government targets. So most of global GDP now is signed up to net zero by 2050. India and China a little bit further out, 2060. But most countries have now signed up commitments to get to net zero. Even larger than that, on the corporate side, these guys are actually moving ahead of their local governments. The vast majority of the listed companies out there have now got 2050 targets at least, if not better. And then the last piece is obviously investor targets as well. So a lot of investor groups have their own targets, and that obviously feeds into what the corporates are doing. So that's the very large sort of opportunity that we're thinking about from the top down, and we think we're very early in this opportunity, obviously. This is just a stylized slide just to show how we're sort of segmenting the universe of potential companies that we're looking at Munro, and it's pretty much a stylized version of the pie chart that I just showed you. So the two top boxes are pretty obvious. So you've got the clean energy companies, so your solar companies, your wind companies, your grid management companies. On the top right, you've got the clean transport, so that's effectively the EV companies and all of their supply chains. Bottom two boxes are a little bit less obvious. So you've got the energy efficiency companies, so again, the companies that build the insulation, the HVAC systems, lighting for buildings like this one. And then on the bottom right, you've got the circular economy names, so i.e. reusing the resources that we have today as opposed to throwing them away. So that's your trash management companies, obviously your water companies and so forth. So that's a broad picture of how we're thinking about the long-term opportunity now over the next sort of 30 years. But also it's really important just not to be passive in this sector as well. We want to be really active, because over time, because we are so early in the S-curve, there's going to be different areas that work at different times. We don't want to be in things that are way too far out into the future, i.e. technologies that are not making money today. We want to be in the technologies that are basically being sold today, where that revenue is being captured today. And so the key one that I'd focus on or point you towards that's happening today is the energy efficiency side. It's really easy for an owner of a building, think the CFO of Walmart, to sign off on a new HVAC system that's going to be better for the environment because they've got net zero targets, but it's also going to save them money as well. The ROI is really good for them. The payback period's really good. So that's where we're seeing the dollars flowing today. So that's why we've got the green around that box at the bottom left. You're getting a lot of growth there. Obviously, you've got the data center as well, which Nick's touched on. That's another big area of growth for these companies, because obviously data centres part of the 30% emissions from buildings that I was talking about, but also growing very, very quickly. So we like that area. The other area we like is the circular economy. There's a lot of sustainability tailwinds. So for example, at the moment, the Biden administration is talking about regulation around PFAS, which are forever chemicals. What's going to be the rulings what's the EPA going to do with regard to getting rid of PFAS in the environment? That's going to help those sort of trash management companies that I was talking about, the hazardous waste companies. So we like those two areas. We're a little bit more mixed on the clean energy side. So there's some areas that we really like, but some areas that we've been avoiding. So we don't like, for the most part, solar at the moment, at least commodity solar. We don't like wind as much, particularly the solar side because of the Chinese oversupply. But what we do really like in this area is nuclear, which I'll touch on a bit later, and also grid. The grid's very, very old in the US. And a lot of these renewables coming on the grid basically makes the grid even less stable. So a lot of investment needs to go in there. So again, pretty old school type of companies involved here. The other area we don't like is actually the clean transport side. We've been out of this area for quite some time, taking the active view that basically there's a supply glut, particularly from the Chinese OEMs, which are effectively smashing their own targets in terms of production growth. So I just sort of spoke about the data centre. So data centre is obviously growing very quickly for the reasons Nick's outlined there. And data centre is actually consuming more energy than the aviation sector at the moment, and it's still growing very, very quickly. Obviously, the aviation centre industry isn't growing as quickly. So this is going to become more and more of an issue. So at Munro, typically what we do is we find this area of structural growth and we try to understand. Nick talked about breaking apart the iPhone. We try to break apart this area of growth, try to break apart the data centre. Who's going to assist the data centre operators, who are all net zero signatories themselves, being Amazon, Microsoft, etc.? Who's going to help them limit their emissions from these buildings? So we own in this fund NVIDIA, because it's got the best chips, the most efficient chips, as well as ARM. But we also own the companies that go into the data centre. So think about like Kingspan on the insulation side, Comfort Systems on the HVAC to cool the building itself, Schneider in terms of electricals, Vertiv cooling the actual racks themselves. Then who's going to provide clean power into the data centre to power this pretty energy intensive operation? Companies like Constellation, which is actually a nuclear generator. Nuclear is an area we really like at the moment. It is actually having a bit of a renaissance here. And the reason this is occurring is the grid is becoming more unstable because of the renewables that's coming into the grid as the coal and gas is being retired. And so nuclear is incredibly important in terms of its capacity factor. So it's basically always on and it is net zero. And so what we've seen is that slowly governments, corporates, etc., are starting to turn back towards nuclear. And that's actually been signed in terms of agreements at a government level last November at COP in Dubai. The flags here, we're just showing the countries that have signed up to commit to tripling their nuclear generation to 2050. And so it's becoming more accepted as an industry as well. And so we want to have investments in this area. The company we like is Constellation. It actually has recently signed deals for data centre with Microsoft, so i.e. probably the most efficient, most aggressive company out there in terms of ESG and net zero has actually blessed their power as being green and credible. And so that's been a big help to this stock. But more importantly actually is what this actually means for its earnings profile from an investment perspective. So Constellation owns over 50% of the nuclear generating capacity in the US. It's a more recent spin out, so you don't see a lot of history here on those two graphs. But you can see that the share price has been quite strong, basically because it's following this light blue line. We spoke to the company last week. We strongly feel that light blue line is going to continue to go up and the share price will continue to go up. The reason that line's going to go up, the EBITDA is going to continue to go up, is because they're actually signing more and more of these deals with corporates to provide this clean power, and the corporates are going to pay them a premium to do that. One of their competitors a couple of weeks ago also signed a deal to basically put data centres within their nuclear power facilities, i.e. behind the meter, not over the grid, so you're not stressing the grid, and they're going to share a lot of the economic benefits of doing that. So we feel that the market is still pretty slow onto this one, and basically estimates are too low and the EBITDA estimates will continue to go higher. So there are a couple of the areas we really like today and a couple of the areas we don't like so much. And just in terms of fund positioning, just to tie that together. So I mentioned the energy efficiency piece is the one that we like the most at the moment. because that's where we're seeing the dollars flow. Back to that example of the Walmart CFO signing off the new HVAC or insulation for the building. That's where the dollars are going today. And so that's the biggest part of the fund. Clean energy we like because of that nuclear piece and because of the transmission and distribution. We don't like so much the solar side and the wind side. They're sort of quote-unquote sort of more obvious sort of renewables areas. As I say, we like circular economy. It's a bit of a catch-all. There's a lot of different areas within here. I think about really old school businesses that pick up trash and recycle it, all of a sudden have this new tailwind for their earnings growth behind them. And then, as I mentioned, we don't like the clean transport side at the moment because that supply glut situation, which basically means prices are getting cut, which basically means margins are coming down, which basically means earnings are going down, so stock prices go down. So that's a quick wrap on the climate fund. So I'll hand over to Chow. Thank you.
Thanks, James. Hello, everybody. My name is Chow Ma, and I'm a portfolio manager at Munro Partners. I met most of you about 7 months ago, so thank you so much for coming back and seeing us again. We've been busy at Munro Partners. We officially started the small and mid-cap fund. We call it the Munro Smith Fund around 5 months ago. And, you know, we've off to a fairly strong start. I think the fund is roughly about, you know, up about 26% since we launched the fund. But here, I just really want to sort of take a step back, and this is one of the first opportunities we get to talk to clients about this. I'm super excited. We just want to take a step back and talk about the philosophy of starting a Smith Fund for Munro. As passionate growth investors, it probably comes as no surprise that we think about the world in terms of S-curves. A lot of these very long-term structural trends, such as artificial intelligence that Nick talked about, or decarbonization that James talked about, we think we're still at a very early stage of these very long-term trends. So we want to find some of these winners early, and we want to help investors make money out of them when we also want these companies over time to graduate to the main fund. So we are thinking about this part of the S-curve. Well, the timing is particularly fortunate because the world's attention is all going to that part of the S-curve. This is the Magnificent Seven. This is the big cap. I mean, we love the big cap too. We think they still have quite a long room to grow. But when you think about this side of the S-curve, the smaller end of the market has never been this cheap. When you think about just the index, the Smith index globally compared to the large cap, the valuation gap or how much they're cheaper is the biggest in 20 years. We've never had Smith companies this cheap since the dot-com bubble. So we thought, well, this is a pretty interesting opportunity to come to the market with a Smith fund. Luckily, we don't have to go far to find these next generation winners. They're right under our noses in the existing Munro areas of interest. So Nick talked about high performance compute. We love semiconductors. We find some of these semiconductors that's exposed to leading edge, that has real technology leadership, and they're enablers of AI. Well, we used the exact same yardstick, and we found 5 to 6 of these smaller semiconductor names for Smith. Nick talked about we love Lululemon for the main fund. Well, we love Lululemon because it's the quality focus, because it's premium priced. We used the same standards, and we found On Running, which is a running shoe company based out of Switzerland, very much in the same philosophy of that direct-to-consumer quality focus. The parity goes on and on and on. We talk about Facebook. We like how AI is actually reaccelerating the user engagement and revenue. Well, it's doing the exact same trick for Pinterest. So in all the major Munro AOIs, we actually just find the same trends, and we're just trying to find the winners a little bit early. When you look at the fund positioning today, it comes as no surprise. The top three AOIs are high performance compute, climate, and consumer. Now, the one thing I just want to take a step back and talk about how we find all these, you know, roughly we hold about 25 companies in the Smith Fund, is we run the exact same investment process as Munro always do. So that 6 criteria that Nick showed you about, we really use the same yardstick, and I'll use the stock examples to illustrate that. The stop loss process is also the same. So it doesn't matter if it's a main fund or Smith fund or climate fund. If a stock falls either 20% from peak or 20% from cost, it triggers a review, and you really have to need the whole team to unanimously agree to keep the stock, otherwise we sell it. So that's really the Munro sell discipline coming through all of our products. So I'll tell you 2 stock stories, that's the fun part, and hopefully give you a little bit of flavor of how we think about some of these companies in the Smithland. The first company is called ASM International, so we call it ASMI. It is a semiconductor equipment company. There are only two things you need to know about ASMI. One is the leader in the most advanced deposition technology in the world. So what is deposition? I always think about the process of building any semiconductor like building a building. And there are two processes that's bread and butter of building this building. The first, you gotta dig a foundation, and you have to remove all the materials you don't need. This is called etching. And the second, you actually have to go in and build a structure you do want, and this is called deposition. ASMI holds 50% market share in the most advanced deposition technology in the world. Its deposition is so accurate that it's literally called the atomic layer deposition. The thickness of the deposition material is usually within 1 to 3 atoms thick. And why this is important? Well, it gives you the most control. To think about it, you can, you know, deposit one layer at a time at a few atoms thick. It gives you massive control, and it gives you the best uniformity in terms of thickness. The second thing you need to know is the world is coming ASMI's way. What do I mean by that? Well, I'm showing you 4 pictures up here. This is what a logic chip looks like to the left, pre-2010. So it's a simple structure. The purple one is a metal gate. The blue base is silicon. And the metal gate basically is the on and off switch for the electricity currents that go through the wafer. So this is a classic logic chip. Starting in 2011, over the past 13 years, it looked like this. Because when we shrink the sizes so small, you start having current leakage from one side to the other. So you say, okay, well, let's add the wafer layer on top of the gate. And then starting next year, that's not enough. So we need to add a lot more of these gray layers within the metal gate. We call it gate all around. Well, the only thing you need to know is they need to add a lot more layers, and these layers are tiny. And who has the best technology to make these tiny layers? ASMI. So this is happening to the logic chip in 2025, which is next year, and it's going to happen to a memory chip likely 3 years from now, and then all the semiconductor chips is basically all going through the same process, needing a lot more layers, more sophisticated, therefore you need the most advanced deposition technology in the world. When you add this all together, this translates into roughly 18% compounded revenue growth and 25% compounded EPS growth. The great thing about ASMI is we know about the customer perception, because the biggest customer ASMI sell to is TSMC, it's SK Hynix, and yes, they're both holdings of the Monroe Main Fund. So this is just a great example to show that when we learn a lot about where the world is going from the research in the Main Fund, we're just following the same trend and finding some of these smaller winners. The last thing is the valuation of ASMI is still very attractive. For 25% compounded EPS growth, this stock is trading at 25 times next year's earnings. So this is still a smaller company, but clearly going to be much more important as the world goes on. The second story is a company called Wix. Now, I don't know how many of you have tried to design your own website. So Wix is a website designing tool that was created in 2006, apologies. So before Wix was created, there are two options if you want to build your own website. You can have a really basic tool, just to put your contact information online and then have GoDaddy host it. Or you can hire a website designer who spent years in designing school and try to master this really sophisticated software, most likely WordPress. So WordPress is the complex software that still powers half of all the world's websites today. So Wix come up with a designing tool that literally looks like little Lego pieces. It says, I'm going to give you maximum control. You can build whatever you want because I'm just giving you little blocks. But you can still drag and drop your little Lego pieces into the website. You don't have to learn how to code. So they kept this going for about 10 years. And then something really cool happened. It turns out the designers don't want to learn how to code either. They say, we don't want to do this. We want to learn how to use Wix's tool better. So the designers start calling Wix, and Wix end up coming up with a designer tool specifically for the professional designers community. And then something even more cool happened last year, AI happened. So now Wix put AI, generative AI, straight into the designing tool. Now you can have a text box, and you can tell AI, I want to build the website for a Pilates studio. I want the color scheme to be purple. Find me the best lavender picture because I want my clients to feel really calm when they walk in. Help me build a planning tool so I know how to schedule my Pilates trainers. Help me take payments. So Wiz can basically now do all this with just the prompting of generative AI. So this is a pretty cool story. And then the most spectacular part of this story is actually this chart. Let's hope my laser pointer works, is this chart. So Wix stock price, it was a great darling stock during COVID. The stock prices peaked at $350. And then in 2022 and 2023, it came down all the way to $80. But during the same time, the blue line is the profitability of the company. It used to be roughly loss-making. And then since COVID, it's find religion in expenses. It's come up with a new designer tool. AI has actually helped triple charge the adoption of its product. Now it's a hugely profitable company. It went from loss-making to 15% EBITDA margin, and management just gave out target for that 15 to go to 25%. So profitability exploded. Yet the stock prices is still lingering at about $130. Well, why is that? Well, because all the analysts are busy analyzing Microsoft. There's about 5 analysts that look at Wix. So we still find these incredible opportunities where you can get roughly 30% of compounded growth of profit for 25 times earnings. So this is really just paints a picture of the opportunities we are seeing for the Smith Fund. And I can give you 10 of the stocks that really have massively improved profitability and a great business, and you can still get it at really reasonable valuation. So I'll hand it back to Nick to wrap up, but happy to come back and take more questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chow, and thank you, James. So we are coming to the end of our journey here. And hopefully what you have gathered through what we've talked about and some of the presentations and some of the stocks we talked about is what we're trying to do here at Munro is we're trying to build that domain expertise. We're trying to build that knowledge base around these areas of interest that allow us to generate returns. In terms of the funds we talked about, the funds, as I said, are all run by the same team. They're all under the same process. And the same people. But most importantly, if you think we could look at the Climate Leaders Fund and the Munro Small Cap Fund, we feel them as increasing or extending our domain knowledge to ultimately feed the larger mandates over time. And this is just all about us extending our domain expertise. The simple way I sometimes like to think about this, and maybe this will help, but would all of us go to the barber to get our hair cut? They go to the dentist to get our teeth cleaned. So what are you paying Munro for? What are you paying us to do? And you're paying us to be experts in our field. You're paying us for that domain expertise. You're paying us to understand what accelerated compute is, to get on a plane and talk to these companies and try and make money out of it. You're paying us to try and understand how the energy transition is going to work and which parts of it are going to work and how to make money out of it. You're paying us and the team to understand how restaurant, quick service restaurants roll out or how athletic, who's winning at athletic equipment and to make money out of it. And we're paying Chow to understand what atomic deposition is because that bit was quite complicated, I thought. I'm joking. It's very impressive. And so that's what you're paying us to do. And say, how do you pay us to do it? These are the products that we are packaging that expertise in. And we are packaging that expertise across 4 products, as I discussed today. And all of them are designed to suit your clients' needs. First and most importantly is the Munro Global Growth Fund, is the Absolute Return Fund. That's obviously the product that we started with. And that is Global Growth Absolute Returns, and is accessible not just on all the major platforms, but also on the exchange and daily priced under the code MAET as a managed ETF. And importantly, our managed ETFs always trade at NAV because they are market-made ETFs. Secondly, you have the long-only product. The long-only product is quite simply the same ideas without downside protection, without hedging, for people who have a higher risk profile or a longer-term time horizon. The Mid Cap Fund is there as our new launch. Why did we launch it? We soft launched it quickly. Why? Because we thought it was the perfect time to do it. This is the perfect time to be looking at small caps. Big caps are not going to be driving these funds forever. It's the perfect time for our bigger funds to be thinking about bringing small caps in. And so it was the perfect time to build up that knowledge base and to find those ideas. And lastly, the climate product. Look, we've long thought this is a great area of interest. It's one that we need to be across for the next 20 or 30 years because this is going to dominate the conversation for a long time now. As James pointed out quite clearly, you need to be active in this product. We're near the start. It's changing all the time, and so our thought base and how we think about it is changing also, but there are great ideas coming out of this. great ideas, and it would surprise you to understand that Constellation is right up there with our best performing stocks this year alongside Nvidia. Lastly, how these funds performed. Okay, so this is a fairly busy slide that shows our performance. There's about a couple of things I want to flag to across the four performances of the funds there. The couple of things I want to flag closely. Firstly, the one-year numbers are quite dramatic. Okay, so this is a dramatic recovery in performance over the last year. We're talking 40 to 50% on the last 12 months. To be fair, we needed to do it. It had been a tough 2 years before that. And that's, again, quite normal as you come out of one of these cycles. We would love to smooth these lines for you. We try to smooth them in the absolute return fund. We wish we even did a better job in the absolute return during the last 3 years. But ultimately, the journey has now gone back to double-digit returns. All of our funds now are back above double-digit returns since inception. And pleasingly, from a personal point of view, all of our funds are now back above their highest point. So there is nobody who has ever bought a Munro fund, assuming they kept it, who has not made money with our products today. And most importantly, that recovery and that double-digit returns is good and exciting, but we do think this is just the beginning. We are in year one of the recovery. We think this should be at least a 3 to 5 year bull market. And obviously the first year is always the most dramatic. From here, all of these structural trends we think will continue. And the reason why we are so confident in the medium term is because when we look across all of these areas of interest that I talked about today, they are all accelerating. If we look at AI in particular, we're literally just at the start here. Sure, the stocks might get ahead of themselves. Sure, they might pull back, but every pullback should be a buying opportunity because this is going to play out over the next 3 to 5 years. Below the AI stocks, if I look at some of these other areas where we see structural growth, some of them are actually going to start benefiting from an economy that's eventually going to recover. And we know the economy is going to eventually recover because interest rates are either flat or slightly down from here. And so from that point of view, I do believe with what I said at the start, you are at quite a good point to be looking at growth equities. We're excited about the structural growth opportunities here. The structural growth opportunities should equal structural earnings growth of at least double digit for the companies that we've identified. And that should ultimately, assuming we get rid of our mistakes along the way, lead to double digit fund performance well into the future.
Just a very quick wrap up. I just wanted to take this opportunity to say on behalf of Munro Partners and on behalf of GSFM to thank you all very much for your support. It's a fantastic turnout today. We've got 200 people in the room. The room hit capacity about 2 weeks ago. So we're actually running another session in a few weeks' time for those people that couldn't join us today. On behalf of all the team, we're delighted to have you here today, and thanks very much for your support. Chow spoke about the SMID Cap Fund. Just to answer the question that came from the audience, it's a great question, thank you, is that we do have research on the way. So we have engaged with two of the large research houses in Australia to provide research. We're expecting the first research report to come through before June 30, and then the second report will come through sometime later in the year, probably November. So we're looking forward to that. The fund is actually making its way onto platforms now. It's making its way onto those IDPS menus. And then as the fund starts to grow, we'll get that on the super menus. Now, every platform's different. Some platforms are a little bit harder than others to get onto those APLs. So we may come to you at some point in time, if you've got interest in this fund, to give us a bit of assistance with getting the fund added to the APL. So we look forward to doing that. James today discussed the Munro Climate Strategy. And I think probably the key message there really is that you really need to be active in this space. And when you look at the returns over the last 12 months, the returns really have supported that thesis. Today, the Munro Climate Fund, as at the end of February, is actually more than 50% ahead of its, some of these popular ETF products in the marketplace. So we would certainly encourage you to, if this thematic is of interest to you, we would certainly encourage you to have a look at the Munro Climate Fund. From a cost point of view, whenever we hear the word ETF and passive, we just make the assumption that they're very, very cheap. I'd encourage you to check that as well, because some of these thematic ETFs, actually these passive thematic ETFs, actually aren't all that cheap either. So we think the cost benefit really isn't there for the ETFs in this case, supporting all the more reason why you need to be active. Now finally, as Nick said at the start of the presentation, Munro's goal is to be your global growth manager. The flagship Absolute Return Fund really is unique in the Australian marketplace. There really is no other fund in global growth equities like this product in Australia. It was designed many years ago for those investors that want to have a focus on that downside protection, the capital preservation piece, those investors that want that smoother ride towards achieving double-digit returns through the investment cycle. And clearly we're thinking here about retiree investors. The Munro Concentrated Fund, it really is, as Nick said earlier, the long-only version of the Munro Global Growth Fund. It's designed for those investors that want to be fully invested. They're willing to put up with some short-term volatility as a way of achieving their longer-term returns, excess return, benchmark returns. But really, at the end of the day, whatever it is, whether it's absolute return, long-only, a thematic strategy like the Climate Fund, or whether you want to move down the market cap towards finding those faster growing names, Munro now have that small to mid-cap fund also. And at the end of the day, it all leads back to the same place. They're all leveraging the same insights that you've heard about today, the same idea generation that you've heard about today. And most importantly, they're all utilising the same repeatable investment process that was developed some 17 years ago that has worked so well for Munro investors over the journey. So whatever it is in global growth equities, Munro have a solution for you, and we're here to help. Now, finally, again, as Nick just said, the Munro have got a fantastic website. The communications team do an amazing job at Munro Partners, and would encourage you all to visit the website, and please utilise all that content, share that with your clients so they can also hear about some of the insights that we've all heard about today. On that note, just wanted to say once again, thanks very much for coming along. Thank you for your ongoing support, and we look forward to seeing you all again very soon. Thank you.